And welcome back to our Independence Day program. I'm George Norrie with our guest Joshua P. Warren, and we'll take your calls on all things paranormal when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Joshua P. Warren with us. We'll take your calls as well, all things paranormal. Josh, what are your next projects that you're working on?
Well, you know, for one thing, I'm going to be heading back to Asheville, North Carolina soon, for George Norrie's big return to Asheville.
August 25th. I'm looking forward to that.
You know what? For one thing, I am so looking forward to going back there to do some more research. I'm going to head to Brown Mountain and some places like that where the Brown Mountain lights appear and take some readings. But for the event there at the Diana Wortham Theater, I'm actually working on some little experiments that we might be able to do with the audience. Does that sound too sinister, George?
As long as it works for people, nobody gets disappearing on us or anything like that?
Well, I can't guarantee that won't happen, but no, I think it would be great to do something really interactive. You know, when you were in Asheville before, I had some UFO debris that was, let's just say some very strange debris that is often believed to be UFO debris from the Roswell area, and we let everybody handle it. And that's something that you don't get to do every day.
That's right.
So I'd like to do some other things that are really special for folks there. And everybody in Asheville just can't wait to see you again. And, of course, I was fortunate to be able to watch your show here in Las Vegas. And it's unbelievable. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people showed up there. And it just shows you the amount of interest there is in your work and the success of this show.
They came to hear me sing, Josh.
Well, and who wouldn't? And you are actually a really incredible crooner, and people may not realize that about you, but that, if for no other reason, just come to one of these shows to hear George Norrie sing, and if you're really lucky, you might even catch an appearance by Elvis, though I suspect that's an extremely rare thing.
You may be right about that. Let's go to the phones. We've got Chris in Tampa, Florida, to get things started. Hey, Chris, go ahead, sir.
I just was curious, Joshua, what do you think of the work of Stephen Gibbs, who has been a guest on Coast to Coast before, I see back in 2004 and 2008, his time dilation or time travel technology, you know, having to do with speeding up, speeding up time or slowing down time clocks come close to some of his technology. And that's Stephen with a V, if you want to check him out.
Yeah, and he's got a hyperdimensional resonator. Josh, Do you know him?
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, his name does not ring a bell. But thank you very much for telling me that, because at this point now I'm so darn curious about what else is out there that I'm going to be looking up everybody who's into this kind of research. So thank you for that reference. I'll look into Stephen Gibbs.
Talked to him about 10 years ago, I think he was on. That was the most recent trip, 10 years ago. I hope the fella's still around. Pretty fascinating work, though. But he's got what is called his hyperdimensional resonator. It's a machine that makes time travel possible, he says.
Yeah, well, maybe he has traveled through time then, right?
So it has to do with equipment. I mean, could you do what you did with the time warp without that device?
No, I couldn't measure that. I mean, I don't have the ability to, I guess what I'd have to do is really sit down and try to machine my own piece of equipment. And I know that Richard C. Hoagland has done some work like that in the past, creating some kind of highly, you know, specialized, unique thing that measures resonance. And, I think he maybe has taken Rolex watches and, tuning forks.
Rolex watches. Like that. Or those other kind, or Timex.
I don't know what he's been experimenting with, but I think, you know, there are people out there who've created their own little specialized rig. But the great thing about this DT meter is that it's designed to be user friendly, and it's designed so that everybody can. I mean, anybody can be taught in 5 minutes how to go out there and do what I did. So it doesn't take that much special skill. And I do realize that because this is a new piece of technology, it's easy to say, well, this could just be some kind of glitch in the technology. But the fact of the matter is, you calibrate the device first. And I've used it all over the place now in this area, and it's always performed very normally. So that combined with the fact that we know these kinds of anomalies exist according to, you know, what, well, Einstein's research and Stephen Hawking's research, et cetera, leads me to believe that we should take this seriously.
Nancy in Victoria, Texas is with us now. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey there. Go ahead.
I have a quick little ghost story to tell.
All right.
So, recently, when my father passed away due to cirrhosis of the liver, there was like this beer bottle that was left because one of his last requests before he passed was that he wanted to have a sip of alcohol.
Oh, geez. All right.
And a few weeks after his funeral, there was like one unused alcohol bottle left in the kitchen one day, and I made a comment to my boyfriend saying that, you know, I wish my mom get rid of this unused alcohol bottle. And then 10 seconds later, boom, two picture frames and several candles were thrown across the kitchen out of nowhere, right in front of us.
Well, he didn't want that bottle gotten rid of, did he?
No, and ironically, a few days later, my mom got rid of it, and I told the story, and she was like, "Are you serious?"
I love it.
I said, yeah.
I love it. Josh, you've come across stories of ghosts, I think they even happened to you, that are pretty aggressive.
Well, yes, and I have actually seen and videotaped, or my team has videotaped, objects moving around. I saw, there was one time I was in South Carolina at a lady's house, and she had been having poltergeist-type activity, and I was looking right at her with a colleague, and all of a sudden this little ceramic dove hanging on the wall behind her just launched off the wall and hit the floor and exploded into a bunch of pieces. And I mean, I've seen some, you know, pretty significant physical things sort of spontaneously erupt in relation to spiritual or haunted or paranormal spots. And, you know, the thing to consider, Nancy, is that, and thank you, by the way, for that story. You know, when people enter the spiritual realm, we have to presume that if they are able to somehow communicate with us, it doesn't mean that they're capable of just popping up and speaking English to us. It may be that all they can do is muster up enough energy once in a while to make some kind of crude attempt at expressing themselves. And so that's why it's very, very seldom that you get stories about people having some clear message communicated. I mean, you look at me, for example, you know, I've been doing this kind of research professionally for 25, 26, 27 years. I've never had some full-bodied apparition appear and talk to me.
Or follow you home or attach themselves to you or anything like that, right?
Well, that has happened.
It has, huh?
That has happened, absolutely. Yeah, I've come back from some pretty scary places, and there was obviously something that followed me back and was messing with me. I mean, that's happened on a number of occasions to the point where it changed my whole outlook on how I approach these folks who are haunted in these destinations. So no, that can occur, but when there is some kind of a spiritual entity, I believe, that is trying to communicate with you, it will do so by altering the environment in more general ways that will get an impression across, but may not be distinctive enough to literally come out and tell you specifically. So like, for example, in your experience, Nancy, you got the picture, you got the message without, you know, having to have it written down and spelled out for you. And that's often how these sort of interactions and communications occur with those who may be on the other side.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Dave's in Fraser Park, California. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Josh. Hi, George. How you doing tonight?
Great, Dave. Thank you.
Okay, I got a couple ideas for Josh.
Okay.
Okay, say you take your meters and you put them around the world. Okay. You know, maybe 10, 12. Okay. Then you have them running for 30 days, 60 days. Or it it would be better for 1 year. Take your readings, okay, and find out if there, if say the planets per se, there's certain times to where the time slips will actually function better. And then, and it also works with consciousness. Say you go to a Buddhist temple and you put your meter there while they're meditating, see what kind of readings you get there. Or also in a very coherent area.
What do you think, Josh?
You know, Dave, I agree with everything you just said, and that is, in fact, the plan. The plan is to see if some kind of a universal database can be created. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of people, but fortunately, I don't think that's going to be a problem. I mean, I was just contacted, I think, a couple days ago by a man who actually works for NASA, who happens to have a great interest in all this stuff on the side. And so he's already obtained one of these DT meters. And so he's told me a whole long list of places that he's going to be taking this thing and reporting his readings back. And so what I'm envisioning is some kind of a website where people who own this device can sort of, you know, sign in or log in or whatever, and give us a report on what their findings are. And this goes back to the idea of plotting different points to see if there is a pattern. And I'll make this very brief, but I like this story about Benjamin Franklin traveling back and forth between the United States and Europe, and everybody knew that it took 2 weeks longer to get back from Europe than it did to get to Europe, but nobody knew why. And so Franklin, being a curious man, started dipping empty wine bottles into the water on his way to Europe and back and taking the temperature. And over time, by plotting these temperatures and comparing them, they formed a pattern which he called the Gulf Stream, which is basically similar to a warm river flowing from west to east in the Atlantic Ocean. And he published a map of this pattern, and for years people ignored it when they could have been saving tons of money, these merchant ships, by navigating, you know, in conjunction with it. And so this is the same thing we're doing here. We're looking at plotting points and knowing that eventually there may be some kind of a pattern that emerges, and hoping that that pattern will tell us more about the relationship between these time-space anomalies and what people experience as their own personal experiential anomalies. And then I also think you're absolutely right, Dave, when it comes to the idea of taking it to places where people are intentionally trying to do something, like where monks are meditating, or we have, you know, other types of psychics or practitioners who are trying to manipulate reality to see just, you know, is this something that is only able to be produced by Mother Nature, or is this something that can only be produced by an extreme technology, or is this something that we actually can produce with our minds as well?
Josh, can you say without a reasonable doubt that ghostly apparitions occur because of energy maybe emitted from the sun at certain times or anything like that, or not?
Well, there certainly is a relationship between the sun and the moon and ghostly activity, and that's why that we have this tradition of the witching hour and more spooky things happening at night. And on one hand, you could say, well, that's just because at night it gets dark, and back in the old days, people couldn't see what was out there, and there were lions and tigers and bears, and they got frightened. And then that's true. But now that we have advanced technologically, we're seeing that, no, there are many physical changes that happen between night and day that are related to the sun and the moon. That's why, you know, when the Earth is being bombarded by the rays of the sun, it manipulates and warps the entire magnetic field of the Earth. The whole magnetosphere changes, and that changes the way that radio waves and other electromagnetic frequencies behave. You see the impact that the moon makes on the waves and the tides of the Earth. So I definitely feel like that at night, when your side of the world is shifted away from the sun, you have a calmer environment in which more subtle energies are able to become visible or appreciable. And that, of course, is enhanced when you're at that time of the year where your whole side of the earth is tilting away, i.e., you know, the fall and the winter, when that's sort of happening. So there is definitely a connection between the way that all of these energy currents flow and the physical dynamics between the earth and these other celestial bodies.
Let's go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona now. Welcome to the program. Hey, Blair, welcome back.
Thank you, George. Joshua, thought forms, both personal and group thought forms, has fascinated me. I read a series of books by an author in the 1980s from Toronto, Ontario, Maurice Cook, who had an experiment done where a group of people gathered together in a circle, and through their thought forms, they created an entity they called Philip, an actual living entity, I guess, in another dimension. So my question to you is, and I think this has to do with your book, personal thought forms for our own personal manifestation and group thought forms. What are your thoughts on this?
Blair, that is an excellent question, and it ties perfectly into this conversation because where we're really talking about tulpas and how it doesn't have to just be creepy, spooky stuff, but how it also can be very positive things. I mean, if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see a graphic posted there called The Wheel of Mastery, which relates to my book, Finding Your Magic, How to Hack Reality Through Lucid Living, in which I'm talking about different ways that people can manifest on their own positive things in their lives. Now, you take a bunch of people and you put them together with a common goal, it becomes absolutely astounding what can be achieved. And so the Philip experiment is a great example of this, in which these Canadian researchers were able to create some kind of an apparition or an interactive ghost by using collective consciousness. And again, this idea of tulpas and fault forms has so often been popularized in a spooky and you know, sort of negative context, that it's important instead to look at this as something that you can harness, that you can get a handle on from a personal point of view. And what we're really doing is talking about transducing, taking one vibration, which is what's in your head, what's in your mind, and actually transforming it into another vibration that becomes physical, because there's no difference between physical and non-physical other than its rate of vibration, and you can control and adjust that with your mind.
Josh, we've got about a minute before the break, then we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you. Where can people get your book, Finding Your Magic?
If you go to joshuapwarren.com, there is no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com, scroll down to the bottom, click the link there on the homepage that says Finding Your Magic. You'll find a nice little video there, and it gives you all the information. You can read this as an instantly downloadable ebook, but even before you do that, you can play chapter one of the audiobook. And the cool thing is, you can not only get this as an ebook and an audiobook, but I'm going to give you an actual magic wand, as crazy as that sounds. Just watch the video and you'll see for yourself. It's handmade in my workshop. And this wand accompanies this entire program. So if you find this interesting, this will change your life. I believe so. I give you a 100% money back guarantee. And you can't do any better than that. If this is of interest to you, please go to joshuapwarren.com and scroll down the homepage to check out Finding Your Magic.
We're coming back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Joshua P. Warren, our final segment. We'll take your calls as well. We're talking about Josh's experiment of finding a time warp and his new book, of course, called Finding Your Magic. And he spells magic M-A-G-I-C-K. That's kind of like that old style verbiage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's funny because here in Las Vegas, where I am right now, you have lots of people like David Copperfield and Murray the Magician running around doing magic shows.
Chris Angel, right?
Chris Angel, you bet. And so, it seemed to me that when I decided to do an event here in Las Vegas to debut this book, I needed to make sure I distinguish what I was doing from somebody who's an entertaining stage illusionist. And so I went back to the more traditional spelling with the K to show that what I'm talking about is not some kind of a trick. I'm actually talking about using and focusing your intention in order to change the physical reality that you experience. So what I'm talking about here is real.
All right, let's go to the real phone calls here. We'll start with Charles in Sheffield, Alabama. Hi, Charles. Well, he's not ready yet, but Linda in Windsor is. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
I voted for you.
Well, thanks.
You're going to get it one day.
What, I think next year we'll probably pull it off.
You got it. I love this talk. I have to say that my sister who had passed sent me a message, from the other side, and it was a, how she sent it, how I received it, was I was just in a sort of a thinking state, relaxed,
mm-hmm.
and then a spiritual message came across, and I was to give it to her daughters, and I thought, oh, God, they're not going to, here we go again, they're not going to believe me or something, but when I told the daughters, they were in shock. Nobody knew about this, and it was, it was so real. And so it does happen, and I know, like what you're talking about is so true. And another thing I wanted to mention was the manifestations. I read through Dion Fortune. She had talked about Mathers and Crowley used to have this kind of mind war where they would manifest, like if Crowley threw fire, Mathers would throw ice or something to douse it out. Have you ever heard of anything about them doing that?
I have not, Josh.
I'm not sure about those particular folks that you mentioned, but I do think that that kind of a technique is absolutely essential and powerful, visualization. So what you want to do in many cases of manifestation is to create something that's very strong and clear that illustrates what you're trying to achieve. And so if you can take something that is, let's say, an obstacle or something that is harming you or something that's depressing you, and you can imagine it as being something that's fiery and irritating, and then you can project your mind throwing ice or water on it and putting it out, then that is actually a very effective way of sort of reaching out into this fabric of mental and physical reality that we live in, and allowing yourself some way of again, gaining a handle on this. It also reminds me of one of the techniques in my book, Finding Your Magic. There's a personality type called the Nameseer, and you ask yourself certain questions. I take you through a process in the book to find out which one of these techniques will work best for you. But for the Nameseer type, what you do is you actually take anything in your life that you want to address, and you turn it into a package. A mental package. So you can take any kind of an abstract thought, whether it be something that is, something that's depressing you or something that's hurting you or something positive that you want to achieve, and you just give it a name. Okay, so you mentally take whatever you associate with that thought and you just give it a name, and it could be a name that makes sense or it could be a nonsense name, but then you start addressing it by that name, and it gives you, again, a focal point by which you can start controlling this abstract thing, and suddenly you will start to see these amazing changes happen in your life. So there are many types of techniques you can use visually and audibly in order to take something and be able to condense it into a package that allows you to get your focus fixed on it more finely.
Michael's with us, first-time caller, Lake City, Florida. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, how are you, George?
Okay, thank you.
I work security, and I had a job in Tallahassee. We're coming back from Tallahassee, so I was going west to Lake City, and to my east, I saw something in the sky. It was a bright white ball, like brighter than bright, and it was looked like it was trying to punch through the atmosphere. And I tried, my boss was with me, so I tried to get my boss to pull over. So, cause there's a lot of trees, and every time it cleared out, we seen it. So I tried to get to a clearing, and when we pulled over, it was, it kind of fizzled out and disappeared. So the first thing I did was I took a picture of it, and I actually text that to you on your text line.
Yes.
And, we saw the, after the trail afterwards. Now I looked it up online and I saw, I looked up as like a comet and it wasn't a comet. Didn't look nothing like that. Then I went to looking like an asteroid, like the trail after the asteroid didn't look nothing like that, because the thing was it was sporadic. It wasn't like on a, like a rainbow form or like a straight line. It was like, it was like sporadic almost. And it looked like a G in like the after trail. And the thing was the trail was pulsing and it was getting lighter, and then it was like fizzing out and it was getting lighter. It was like pulsing. And first I thought it was like the moonlight like was making it glow, but the moon wasn't around. It wasn't on that, wasn't there.
And it was so just, like, just one object.
Yeah. It was just one object. And the thing it was when it was moving, it, like I said, it looked like it was punching through the atmosphere. It kind of had like a half moon. If you like draw a half moon and then you put the circle behind it, that's what it looked like. It was like moving, and that's what was the
What could something like that be, Josh?
Well, you know, an unidentified flying object to me is going to be different than an unidentified flying object to a pilot, because a pilot is much more familiar with seeing airplanes in the sky,
sure,
than I am from that point of view. And you could say the same thing about an astronomer. And the fact of the matter is there are lots of very weird things that are flying around or shooting through the sky every single night. And the description that you gave, Michael, is quite intriguing, and I'm glad that you took note of that level of detail, and I'd love to take a look at your photograph and see if there's anything that could be extracted. But, you know, there's just no way to know what that could be, especially if we're talking about something at night. And so, you know, that's part of the frustration of exploring this stuff. I mean, we can speculate, but I honestly can say that could be something natural. It could be something that's of a military order, mm-hmm. or it could be something.
Or it could be the UFO we're always looking for.
Well, that's right. And so, but feel free if you want to email it to me, you know, just please go to joshuapwarren.com and you'll find my email address at the bottom of the page. I do read every single email. I don't have time to reply to everyone, but I'll be more than happy to look at that for you.
Yeah, you're like me too, Joshua. They roll in. You can't respond to everyone. You'll be there typing away all day.
It'd be a full-time job, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's take a few more calls here. Diana's in Manhattan, New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Di. Go ahead.
Hi, I love your show. I'm a long-time listener.
Thank you.
Joshua, I have total respect for your talents, but why don't you go to where your relative disappeared and find out exactly what happened to him?
Interesting question, Josh.
Well, actually, Diana, I tell you, I have spent so many years doing just that. I mean, as soon as I became an adult, I went to Barnardsville, North Carolina, where this incident occurred, investigated the old farmhouse. I even hired a man I believe is the best forensic historian in the world. His name is Vance Pollock, and had him go back and look through the entire paper trail related to my great uncle, Claude Calloway. I'm talking about birth certificate, employment records, census records. Interestingly enough, for a while, he worked for a company that made coffins.
How'd you like to work for a company like that?
Yeah, back in those days. This was the 1930s.
People are dying to work there, right?
You bet. And so, you know, and I talked to every single elderly person that I could talk to who had any kind of memory or recollection of that incident. And they all told me the exact same version of the story. And I've published articles about it. I have written about it in a number of books. And the funny thing is that the paper trail for him, for Claude Calloway, it ends on that day. And there's nothing that I was able to find in my paranormal investigations at that time. Now, we're talking about, you know, probably 20 years ago, that gave me any insight. But now that I have this new technology, wouldn't that be a perfect place for me to go and investigate and see if I can find one of these potential space-time anomalies? So,
would be cool.
You know, I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm going to be revisiting a lot of the places that I've researched throughout my life, and so this is going to turn over into a whole new chapter of research that's quite exciting.
What's going on with the wishing machine?
You know, the wishing machine project is absolutely astounding, because I'm not sure how many years we've been doing this, but thousands of these machines have now been sent to countries all over the world. I doubt that, you know, anybody could name a country that doesn't have a
that
wishing
doesn't
machine
have one.
In it.
I love it.
And of all those thousands and thousands of machines, I'm telling you, 97% of the people who give us feedback tell us nothing but positive feedback, that they have been able to create incredible results with these. And that small margin of people who have not had success are usually wishing for something ridiculous. They want to live forever, or they want to fly like Superman, or something that is unreasonable. Because a wishing machine, it is a bizarre technology, but I believe it is a technology. And it has to be used properly. So if you educate yourself on how to use it, and we have just hours and hours and hours of video and audio.
Well, you have great instructions, too, and full information on all of this at Joshua P. Warren's website, which is linked up for you right now at coasttocoastam.com. Josh, thanks for spending your Independence Night with us. I really appreciate it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.